today's share, we're going to be taking on a completely different unit, different look at things from the style of Megillah. Now, I'm sure everybody's heard a number of different takes on the Megillah, and it's incredible how 10 short chapters can have so much to tell. But there's one particular thing which has really stuck out at me, I think if we could develop it together with the context of Nach as well, because that's what we do together. Let's try to get into that. So I would like to just take a step which the Megillah itself takes, which is out of the context of what it regularly does, and it talks about something else, something outside of itself. So if we were to just take a look on the first page of sources, in source 3, this is perhaps one of the most dramatic scenes of the Megillah. And it's the scene where you're able to concentrate a little more because there's no Haman in this perek. Right, there's nobody's banging, and nobody's. This parak I always enjoy because it's a period of time where you can just think. And there's this dramatic scene unfolding between Mordechai and Esther, and perhaps the most, the most emotional statement which Mordechai makes right over here is Vayomer Mordechai laHashivel Esther. He tells Esther this message: Al tadami nafshle ben Asheich. Don't think to yourself, Lihimolet beis Amelech mikol Ayodim. Don't think you're gonna escape from all this genocide that's going on around you. Ki im hachareish tacharishi, if you will surely be silent, bo'es kazahazos, at this time, revach v'atzalah ya'amod la'yodim mimakom acher. There will be, salvation will arise from the Jews from another place. Va'at uveis avich tovedu, and you and your father's house will be destroyed. Umi yodea im la'es kazos higat l'malchus. Who knows if this is why you got the position in the first place. That's a very powerful statement because, in a certain sense, it's a statement to all of us. Meaning, we all are in specific positions in life, and so who knows, maybe our position in life is because we need to be doing something specific. Maybe we need to be taking that initiative. It's a statement which really resonates throughout the generations, that you history will carry on in its course, or you're going to be part of it. That's really the statement of Monarchy, which is something which is really, outside of just the Megillah context, is a very powerful statement, and she agrees to him. And at her own sacrifice, as she says at the end of the next two psukim, at her loss of the next two psukim, she says, "Vakasher avaditi, avaditi." I'm going to lose because of this, but I'm going to nevertheless do so. Now, what is very fascinating about this is the following: is that I italicized the words "Va'at ubeis avich tovedu," you and your father's house will be destroyed. So Mordechai was part of that. He's part of that. But what is he saying to her? He's trying to convince her right now that it is going to be he's trying to convince her right now that keeping quiet is not the way to go. Right? You need to take action. But if you don't, you know what? You're not going to succeed in being safe. Why is she not going to be succeeding in being safe? Why not?
She's part of the whole club.
She's part of the whole club, but why couldn't she just... is this space for Hanan Aranda? Sorry. Why is it not possible to come out? I think she has a pretty good escape plan. Nobody knows that she's Jewish.
Right.
Nobody knows she's Jewish now. Nobody's going to say that she's Jewish. What Mordechai is going to tell on her? Why is she going to be destroyed? But more than that, why is her father's house involved over here? Why is the Megillah taking the time to tell us that in fact that there's a threat on her heritage? Okay, she's the player. She's the person in history we need to be dealing with. What is the context of her history which is relevant to this particular story? Okay, so there is a comparison which the Megillah is drawing upon, and it draws upon it in a few places. I'd like to make this parallel to try to understand this notion. And with that understanding, to try to broaden our understanding of the Megillah as a whole. Okay? So here we go. There is an uncanny connection between the Esther, the queen, and the king, Shaul HaMelech. Now, I'm sure people have heard of this notion before. They happen to be from Binyamin. But I'd like to draw, first of all, just some textual comparisons, because after all, we are in the Megillah, we are in our regular Nachshir. So we're going to focus a little bit today on Shaul HaMelech in relation to Esther HaMalka. There's a few fascinating relations. First of all, when we're first introduced to Mordechai, who, let's say, is the foster father, perhaps husband, let's call the foster father for simplicity, of Esther, on the first page, it says, Ish Yehudi, Haya B'Shushan Avira, Ushmo Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish Ishimini. So we're introduced to him, who's obviously related to Esther, as a Yehudi, he's a Jew, who is related all the way back to Kish. Fascinating. And he's called Ishimini. What does Ishimini mean? Regularly, when we say Ishimini, what does that mean? Right. He's a person from Binyamin, and that's generally in Tanakh. When a person's from Binyamin, they are labeled Yemini. Bin Yamin, son of my right hand son. So Yemini, he's this right hand person. Okay. That's the context of Esther. Fun. We go on in the Megillah. We know the one thing which is unusual about Esther Amalka is that she doesn't talk about herself, right? We know that in the second pasuk quoted, which is in the second parak on the 20th verse, Ein Esther Mageres Molaleto ve'es Amo. She does not disclose her birthplace, her nation, nothing. Which, by the way, is a little bit of a fascinating note in terms of. In terms of what interested Achashverosh in a perspective wife.
She did that because Mordechai.
Right, so Mordechai does tell her that, but it just is an interesting note to know that what you know the kind of person that Achashverosh is. To him, obviously, in a wife, the regular shidduch conversation of you know where they came from and the schools they went to is not happening right over here, right? So it is interesting just in terms of the womanizing which is going on over here to the extreme which the Megillah is painting it in, but. We have over here a very quiet and we'll call her a private person. More than that, even when it comes to the fact that she is able to access all these perfumes and makeup that has spent a year presenting themselves to the king, nevertheless she decides not to. She doesn't get involved with it. She's not ascetic. She's completely internal. It seems doesn't talk about things. Doesn't present herself publicly.
She actually doesn't sound like she has a great personality.
Right. You're saying you wouldn't have suggested her for the king.
But she's got a little makeup.
I hear you. There definitely is what to be said about this. I'm just saying these Mara Macombs to my mother here.
If you're scared to death, you're quiet.
Either there you talk a lot.
Yeah, well, she was smart enough to be smart.
So, these particular points, also another, obviously, is the defining characteristic of a person is their name. And in their name, in her name, her name is Esther, which we learn from the Torah, is Hester Astir Esponai. Hashem says, I'm going to hide my face. Fantastic, interesting. So we have this idea of hiding her face, hiding her name, and that's how she finds expression. So taking all those points, let's pull it back now to the person we love and know, Shaul HaMelech. And these connections are actually quite eye-opening. As we turn to Shaul, at the bottom of the first page, it says as follows, Vayehi ish mibin yamin. So this is the first introduction to Shaul HaMelech. This is in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tes. There was a man from Binyamin, Ushmo Kish, Ben Aviel, Ben Sror, Ben Bechoras, Ben Alfiach, Ben Ish Yemini Gibor Chayil. Okay? So first of all, the first thing is just the same introductions. Mordechai is introduced as Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Abira, and here we're introduced to Vayi Ish Mi Binyamin. Okay? Now also, just simply, his name is Kish. So Mordechai is clearly his great grandson, right? The great grandson. So first of all, they're related, great grandsons, introduced in a similar manner, and they're also known as Ishimini. He's called Ben Ishimini, but they're both they're both related to the tribe of Binyamin. That's our first introduction to this. Fine. Veloy, just 1 second. Apologize. Okay, going on. So now as the story of Shaul unfolds, there's a few unusual parts to this. So let's just read through this very fast, without spending too much time on the details, just to get the picture over here. V'lohoyo ben shmo Shaul. So Kish has a son Shaul. V'atov, he's a good and a young man, or chosen man, and good. V'ein ish mibnei Yisrael tov mimenu. Nobody else is better than him. Mishichmo v'mala gavo mikol am. So he's an extremely tall man. That comes out in other places later on. Vatovadno ha'asanos l'kish avi Sha'ol. And he loses his she donkeys. This is Kish, loses his she donkeys. Vayama Kish Sha'ol benos. He says to Sha'ol, would you mind kachno itchos achad menorim? Take one of our lads, one of the houseboys. V'kum leich bakesh ha'asanos. Go find these donkeys. So he goes around the orbit of his regular orbit, doesn't find them. And he goes to Sha'alim a little further abroad, nothing. He doesn't find them in Eretz Yemini either. So he comes to the land of Tzuf. Sha'ol says to his son who's with him, let's go back. My father's going to be worried about us. First interesting thing you say about Sha'ol HaMelech over here is, wait a second, who's he talking to? He's talking to the person who, you know, chops the wood for the fire at their house. You know, and he said, you know, maybe my father's going to be concerned about us. Us? It's me! Yeah. Me, I'm the person that my father's going to be concerned about.
But that's Sha'ol.
Right? Sha'ol obviously has a sense of inclusiveness. Either you can go either directions. In terms of inclusiveness of the person with him, but more than that, maybe also is a lower sense of self that he doesn't see himself as this hoity-toity person who is above others. He sees himself as a person among others. So he turns and he says he's going to worry about us. Let us go back. He's on the same level in the way he talks to this lad.
Could also be that his father might actually care about this other.
You're right.
Pass that on.
You're right. So you're saying it just might be like, okay, well, don't destroy the car.
I mean, you care about people.
Work for you.
Right, you do. You're right, you could take it that way. It does seem in the rest of the conversation as well that he's equating. You're right, they definitely, I would agree. It should be a basic concern on your property, and certainly a slave, which is probably one of the most expensive parts of your property, I would imagine. But his equating is somewhat unusual in terms of the way he discusses it. So he says, let's go back. And then the conversation follows. I put the ellipses in over there just because the conversation follows. The lad says, you know what? Maybe there's this seer in the nearby town. Why don't we go ask him about the donkeys? And he says, well, we don't have any money. So the boy says, you know what? I've got a little bit of money. I can give it to you. We can give it to him as a present and ask him for advice. Fine. They arrive at the city. They ask a few girls where he's to be found. They say, if you go up there, you'll see he's just about to make the sacrifice. They walk into town in Pasuk Yudches, Vayigash Sha'ul el Shmuel. So he approaches Shmuel, Besoich HaShar, in the gate. Vayomer Hagidonali Eze Besaro. We're looking for the seer, excuse me. They're speaking to Shmuel, okay? Vayan Shmuel el Sha'ul, he says, Vayomer, Anachi Aroya, I am the seer. Alei Lefona HaBoma, go up in front of me to the bomber, the altar. You're going to eat with me today. And I'm going to send you off in the morning. Anything you want, tell me. I will tell you. And by the way, those donkeys which you haven't yet asked me about, right? For the last 3 days which are lost to you, don't get worried about those donkeys. They've already been found. Somebody else in the other direction must have found them. They've been found. Don't worry about it. Ulumi kol chemdas Yisrael haloi lecha ulechol beis avicha. And to who is the way they translate it is the desire or the sweetness of Israel? It's to you and to your father and your father's house. So first of all, parallel phrase, right? Atu beis avich tovedu. When Mordechai turns to Esther and says, "You, if you don't fulfill this mission, you're going to be lost." He's saying you and your context, you and your family history. When Shmuel turns to Sha'ol and says, you're going to be the king, he says, he's giving them a hint, he's saying you and the context of your tribe, your family, is going to be king. Okay? There's something about the family over here, which we're going to have to investigate in a second, why that's so. But, so he's hinting to him, he's making an innuendo in his first conversation. He's first showing that he's very powerful, he knows exactly what's going on with these donkeys. Number two is he says, I know that you're going to be king. In that, Vayan Sha'ul, in Sha'ul responds to this innuendo, Vayomer, Halo Benyamini Anochi, I am a mere Benjaminite, Mikatnei Shifte Yisrael, from the smallest of all the tribes of Israel, Mishpachti Hatzi'ira, and my family in particular is the youngest, Mikol Mishpachot Shifte Binyamin, of all of the different families of Binyamin, V'lomo Dibarto Elai Kadavor Hazeh. Why are you speaking to me in these terms which I'm scared to think of? He doesn't want to address the matter which Shmuel HaMelech is hinting to him. Okay, that's the starting point. So Shmuel HaNavi is talking to Shmuel HaNavi is referring to Shaul as some sort of king. He backs out of it. I'm the smallest tribe. I'm not part of this. That's his first reflection about kingship. By the way, back to Gideon for a second. Those are the words of Gideon, right? It's just is interesting that remember when we referenced that point. That was his response as well. Now, what continues over here is Shmuel actually brings him up. Shmuel HaNavi anoints him as a king, and he says, "Go back to your house, and we'll make a session. We'll make an inauguration ceremony." Great. What happens? He arrives back home, and his uncle, very responsible uncle, says to him in the next source, "Vayomer doid Shaul elov ve'elnaro." So his uncle says to him in the lad, "Onalachtem." So where was it? Where were you? "Vayomer levakesh ha'sanos." I was looking for those donkeys. It was very hard to find them. "Venira kiayin v'navo el Shmuel." And we couldn't find those donkeys right away. So you know what? We came to Shmuel. "Vayomer doid Shaul hagidon ali." You know. So tell me. Ma, this is going to the third page. "Ma omar lachem Shmuel." So what did he say to you? "Vayomer Shaul." And Shaul said, "El dodoi," to his uncle, "Hagedi gidlanu kinim so asanas." He was very kind. He told us that they'd already been found. "Ves devar hamlucha lohi gidloi asher omar Shmuel." He doesn't tell him that he was anointed as a king. This is his uncle. You know, it could be a family business. Right? This is something we could all understand. He's not telling it the whole world. But he doesn't even tell his uncle. I think that this phrase is a phrase which the Megillah is borrowing, "Ein Esther Megillas Molada Tov Es Amo." That idea of Esther retaining her personal information is reflected originally in the silence of Shaul, even when questioned about his encounter, which is something which is a very important part of his life. So he's first not willing to share this, but it gets better. Because then, in a few psukim later, Shmuel calls a national gathering, and he says, "You know what? You asked for a king. I've got your king. I'm going to find you now." So you can imagine everybody's waiting. You know, some people are busy thinking, "Is it me?" Some people are thinking, "I hope it's not me," right? So everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats, and Shmuel walks towards the people. So this is where we find ourselves in the next section, under section 3. So he approaches all the tribes. Everybody's sort of, you know, backing off, and he approaches the tribe of Binyamin, or he traps them, meaning he, in a certain sense, he moves towards them so that they're against the wall. There's nowhere they're going. And he approached the tribe of Binyamin, to all the different families. They're all standing in different arrays. And he chooses or entraps the family of Matri. By Lokeid Shaul ben Kish, and in that he approaches Shaul ben Kish, but by Vakshu v'loi nimtza, he wasn't there. So Shmuel knows where he's going, but the seat's empty, right? So what happens? By Yishalu od ba Hashem havo od halom ish. Wasn't there a man around here? By Yomer Hashem hinehu nechbo el hakelim. He is in among the baggage, as they translated over here. He is in the pantry. He is hiding. So this is again a continuation of the same way in which he interacts with his uncle, right? His uncle says, "So what happened?" He's not willing to tell, and when he knows what's about to happen, he knows he's the person who's going to be there, he's hiding around the back. So they bring him out, and he stands there, and because he's so tall, the moment he steps into the gathering, everybody notices him, because his head and shoulders literally above everybody else. And now Shmuel now says, "Oh, look, Vayomer Shmuel, El Kolam." Shmuel says to the people, "Hari isem asher bochar bo Hashem. Look who the chosen person of God is. Look who the chosen person is. Ki ein komo b'cholam. There's no one like him in all the people. Vayariu kolam vayamru yichi amelech." And all the people shouted out, "Long live the king!" But was it all the people? It wasn't really all the people, because you'll see in the next, just right here in the next pasuk, "Vayadaber Shmuel alam el meis mishpatam lucha." So Shmuel now dictates how kings act. He wrote a rule book of kings. And he leaves it in front of Hashem, which probably means near the Aaron. So everybody returns to their houses. Now what happens? So Shaul returns to his house. And there are a number of valorous, strong people who Hashem touches their heart, and they go with Shaul. They don't just leave him alone. But uvnei Bli'al amru, there were people who we'll call them, just for the easier sake of just translating the word Bli'al as evil, but it also means yokeless people. Ma yoshienu zeh? What is this? He's a farmer. He's looking after animals. What is he, a king? By Vizuhu, they disgraced him. Whereas everybody else is bringing him these offerings, they refuse to. What's the reaction? By he kamacharish, and he was silent. Notice obviously the same words, which Mordechai is turning to Esther and saying, and he says to her, im hacharish tacharishi lois kazois. If you're going to keep quiet at this time. So, it's fascinating. When we first meet Shaul HaMelech, he's a person who steps back. I'm the smallest of tribes. Even when he's anointed, I don't want to be part of this whole this whole business. He doesn't tell his uncle. He moves backwards. Even when he's king, and he should perhaps be acting in a way which would be expected of a king, which is to kill competition. Anybody who's going to rebel against him and perhaps be a fifth column, he doesn't take action against them. He is silent. And it continues to even after the war. His first incredible success of the war is against Ammon. And after the war, the people say to him in the fourth source on page 3, Vayomer ha'am el Shmuel, mi ha'amer sha'ol yimloich aleinu, tenu ha'anashim v'nimisem. Who are the people who questioned your kingship at the beginning? These people who are the Bli'al didn't send you the Mincha. Bring them out now. Now that we've succeeded in the battle, we're going to show them. We're going to prove to them that you're really the king and kill them. Nobody's going to die today. Today, God did a salvation to the Jews. Okay, so we have this Shaul, and I would argue at this point in time, not I, but a number of the Mefarshim argue that this is actually a very positive thing. His silence, his humility, and his not willing to kill others just like that is actually a very positive thing, which is being expressed over here. The problem is that all characteristics have two sides, right? All characteristics, whether there's no such thing as a particular character trait which is completely one way, except for two of them, which I'll let you think about. The two ones which the Rambam says should always be on the opposite extreme of, but in general, there's always two sides to a coin. So those two are anger and arrogance. Anger and arrogance. Okay, arrogance is going to actually be a little bit relevant to us in a few minutes. But over here we have what seems to be a very sweet, subtle person, right? Who isn't about fanfaring his power. The problem is its reflection. Is his voice doesn't appear at the right time as well. Because in the war against Amalek, which also notice is the war which Esther is fighting, Shaul HaMelech and Esther HaMalka are both fighting Amalek. In the common enemy, Shaul HaMelech loses his voice. So he's told to kill everybody, everything, all possessions, every human being of Amalek and animals, and he saves the king and the possessions because he wants to bring it a sacrifice to God. Shmuel arrives and says, "What are you doing? I told you everybody." And he says, "You know what? I did what Hashem said. I'm going to bring this as a sacrifice. I brought Agag, the king, as a war. This is to triumph God's success. We'll kill him here." In the meantime, Shmuel beats him down and tells him as follows. He says, "Vayomer Shmuel." This is on the top of page 4. Once we get through the text, there won't be as much more text. I just want to just get a sense of how these are paralleled. Shmuel says to Shaul, "Haloim katonata beinecho. You may be small in your eyes." Katon was the way he described himself in his first retort against Shmuel's address. "If you think you are small in your eyes, Rosh Shiftei Yisrael ata. You're also the head of all the tribes, which means you're the king. And there's a way a king is expected to act. Vayimshachacho Hashem lemelech al Yisrael. Hashem made you a king. Vayishlachacho Hashem baderech. He sent you on the way. Vayomer lech v'acharamto esachatoim v'esamalek v'nilchamto boy ad kalasom osom. You expected to destroy Amalek. V'lomo lo shomata b'kol Hashem. Why did you not listen to Hashem? V'ata tel ha-sholal, leaned, you're pulled towards the direction of the booty. V'ata'as ha-rabbe ne Hashem. You did the evil in the eyes of God. So what's Shaul's excuse? He's given an excuse before this. He says, "I did it for the right reason." When it comes down to it, when he's put in the corner, so his answer is, "Vayame Shaul Shmuel Asher Shamati b'Kol Hashem." I listened to the voice of Hashem. Va'ele b'derech Asher Shalachani Hashem. I listened to the voice of Hashem, and I listened to the voice of Hashem. Va'vias Agag Melech Amalek v'Samoyeh Cheramti. So I did listen to the voice of Hashem. We're skipping a few psukim just for the sake of brevity to pare down to Pasuk Chof Dalet. There's another voice here he agrees he listens to. Vayomer Shaul El Shmuel in Pasuk Chof Dalet, Chotasi, I did sin. Ki avarti es pi Hashem vestevorecho, I transgressed Hashem and your word. Ki oresi es ha'om veshma b'kolam, because I fear the people and I listen to their voice. So his self-admission is, first he says, I listen to the voice of God. But when it came down to it, he says, I listen to the voice of the people. And the big question is, where was his voice? That's the question. So there's something.
Because of his stature, because of his physical.
No.
It's no, that was none. When
in the beginning, when it says, "We have tov." Bachor v'tov and tov
that seems to refer to his physical.
Yes and no. The Tov maybe also his characteristics. Yeah. Well, we should be aware that David HaMelech is also, just if you work out the chronology, David HaMelech is alive at the time that Shaul was made king. Just to be aware. Yeah. And David HaMelech is actually 28 years old at the time. So David HaMelech, I think according to the chronology, David's not a youngster. No, sorry. This I saw today as somebody said that, but now that I just said that doesn't make so much sense. But he is around, but he's not chosen. Shaul is chosen.
70.
He ruled at the age of 30.
Yeah. Years.
But he was chosen as a lad to rearing the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
So what does a lad mean? Does that mean to say a teenager? So it might not be so clear. So let me just research that particular point. I just read something this morning. I said that. But the point of that is that Shaul was chosen. Why Shaul was chosen, I'd like to get back to in just a few minutes' time. Why it is particularly that Shaul, and more particularly Binyamin, has a place in Malchus, in kingship. Okay, so I just at this point, what I want to do is just parallel that Esther is picking up from where Shaul left off. She is being asked not to keep quiet in the place that he lost his voice against the same enemy and succeeds. Right, right. You see what's going on over here. And more than that, that's what the Megillah is saying: At vabeis avich atovedu, meaning you and your father's house will be destroyed because now is the time to pick up the dropped rope. Now's the time to where you need to take responsibility, even though you're a person who doesn't talk about your background, who's silent, who's private, just like Shaul HaMelech as well. When you're a king, you have a greater responsibility to the people, and that means to say not listening to that which would be the most apparent voice in your face. To Shaul is the people, to Esther it's her own safety. Okay, so we have this parallel, which is Esther picking up from where Shaul left off, and in fact making a tikkun, fixing that war against Amalek by her speaking out. So where does this kind of draw back to? I would like to draw back even further, because both by Shaul and Binyamin and Esther talks about at ubeis avich, you and your father's house. That's what Shmuel HaNavi says. You and your father's house are now fitting to be kings. Why? Why specifically, though? Why specifically the Shevet of Binyamin? Now, because of time, and we do still have a bit of time, but I would like to do this extemporaneously. Extemporaneously. I have the sources over here, so they are here. But let's just discuss this outside, okay? Without the three particular sources. There's a Gemara Megillah which says a fascinating thing, and it says that in the schus of the tznius of Rachel, she had Shaul HaMelech, and in the schus of Shaul HaMelech's tznius, then she had Esther. Okay, so what tznius do we know about Rachel? What was so tzanua, so we'll call it modest about Rachel Amenu?
She wouldn't get off the horse.
So we know that she wouldn't get off the camel in the case of Lavan. What else over there? So the Gemara points to the fact that she gave over these sons. But now let's just recap. Rachel has made a secret contract with Yaakov from the time that they meet. She wants to marry Yaakov, he wants to marry her, but they know that there's going to be the switch around. So she makes these sons with Yaakov, which is going to be some sort of code that they're going to realize that this is really, it's really her, not anybody else. But when it comes down to the marriage and the things actually happen, she tells Leah the sons in order that Leah shouldn't be embarrassed. Okay, so if you were to describe that, what word would you use? What Hebrew word would you use to describe her actions? I would use rachami, maybe chesed, right? Why tznius? Why is it tznius? So this is an important point, and because it's specifically because of her tznius that two people come out of her who are in fact tzanua. Shaul is a very tzanua person. He's modest. He doesn't go trumpeting his success. And Esther similarly, right? She's a very private person. So what is the tznius of Rachel over here?
Well, the other thing we know about them is the beauty and lack of, according to the way they're described.
In terms of Rachel.
Rachel being described as Yasetar, and Rachel and Leah being described as
Right, so you're right. We do know that Rachel is beautiful, and that also relates a little bit to what Timna was mentioning, that Shaul is also in that
right,
sense.
So there's some tzanua in there, I think, in terms of being willing to maybe having that beauty and being able to take that back seat.
Right. You know, the Torah is telling us about her beauty. She's not telling us about her beauty. I mean, we don't see her acting in that way. That's part of
it
as well.
But
No, so take it further. So she is this beautiful lady, and she is and Yaakov admires her. And we're going to see not just for the beauty, but certainly that's there as well. And nevertheless, she lets.
Nevertheless, she gives her place over to her sister, who isn't. I mean, there's something, you know, who maybe doesn't have the same opportunities that she has.
So there's absolutely that. So we should be just careful. All we know about Leah is her eyes.
Yeah,
we don't know so much about her. Just so you're right. But the way she's described, in a sense, in contrast, is not describing her beauty. It just talks about her soft eyes, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But you're right. We have Rachel over here, who's the chosen, who's the beautiful, and she's now giving up her seat. But listen to this incredible pasuk. It comes later on in the story of the Dudaim, where Reuven finds these plants which apparently have some link to fertility, and Leah comes and Rachel wants to make a deal with Reuven. What's Leah's response to
She doesn't say, you know, she doesn't remind Leah that she gave her the...
Rachel doesn't remind Leah about the fact that she gave her the simonim, but what's Leah's words?
Okay, when she's, tonight, now get them tomorrow.
But she says, Hama'at kachteich es ishi. Is it not enough that you took my husband already? Mm-hmm. Now you want to take the dudoim of my son?
And she could have said,
excuse me?
Wait a second, you took my
excuse
husband.
Excuse me, Rachel should have just said up, excuse me. Husband, I gave you my husband.
Right.
Not only did I give you my husband, I gave you therefore the bechor. Do you realize? I mean, I've given you now the Bechor who's the king, in a sense. I've given you a Reuven who's going to transfer to Yehuda and Levi, all the aspects of Bechor. But she doesn't. There's silence. There's silence over there. It's clear, Rav Rivlin, who's a teacher of mine in Israel, points out, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz before him, points out that it's clear that the way in which she gave these simonim to Leah was in an unassuming way that Leah didn't even realize that there was something else there. So Leah thinks she's entitled to this position of first wife to the extent that she responds in such a negative way to Rachel. That's what you see going on over here. So the tznius of Rachel is when something like that is said to you, do you respond? And there's no response. There's only an emotional response. The Torah doesn't even say what she thinks at that point in time in that response.
There's so many farshim that talk about that actually admonish Rachel for that whole story. You know, that whole incident.
The incident of the Dudaim.
Yeah, that it's interesting that you're now assigning this huge...
Right.
You know...
Right, I think there's a lot to be said about that. I think it's just a very fascinating... Is that this is a place... This is... Whoever's... Who could be more entitled to this marriage than Rachel? Who could be more entitled to this marriage than Rachel? And nevertheless, who thinks she's the most entitled is Leah. That's an incredible thing that to be able to create that. We often in our lives make compromises. We make compromises in our life. But most of the time, or not most of the time, but a lot of the time, we make the compromises, we make sure other people realize we're making compromises. Right? We like to throw in something, and even if it's not right then, but certainly when we're attacked about it, we're going to explain our position. She never does that. That's something, there's an incredible value of silence over here, which that is the point which the Gemara says leads to a Shaul HaMelech, and that is the point which leads to an Esther Amalka. But it gets better, because there's a person the Gemara doesn't mention in between, and that is Binyamin. Binyamin is the tribe, this the youngest son of the youngest of two siblings, Rachel and Yaakov, and he is the father of this tribe in which Shaul HaMelech comes from. Fascinating. So what do we know about Binyamin? So, first of all, he is the tribe of quiet. Why is he the tribe of quiet? Before we even get to what everybody's thinking, just think of his name. What's the name of the last son of Rachel? So Yaakov calls him Benjamin, but she calls him Ben Oni. Ben Oni. What does Ben Oni mean?
My poor.
Oni is the S with an I in, with an I, that Ben Oni. Oni comes from the word, what was that?
Sorrow?
Sorrow could be one of them. There's a number of interpretations. The Ramban indicates two interesting ones. The one is Aninus. Aninus is the son of my mourning. An onin is a person between death and burial. What do we know about people who are in aninus? There's a specific halacha, ein loy peh. They don't have a mouth. They're not able to express themselves. They're quiet. They're silent. That's why when you go to a shiva house, we don't speak to the people directly. We wait for them to speak to us first, right? Because ein loy peh, it's their choice to open up. It's their choice to speak. We have Benoni. He starts off his essential name in a certain sense. On one hand, is the person of silence. But you want to hear something incredible? There's a midrash on Esther Rabbah, which says that what was the stone of Binyamin on the Choshen? Each tribe had its own stone. The name of the stone was Yoshveh. Yoshveh was the name of the stone, and that is the same word as Yesh Peh. He has a mouth, but he doesn't say anything. And the midrash goes on to say that in fact, an incredible thing. Binyamin knew about the Mechiras Yosef. He knew about the Mechiras Yosef, but he didn't say anything. Now, could he say anything? Just think about this. Yosef, according to the Midrashic line, was one of the reasons the brothers hated him? Also telling on them what they used to do. Now, Binyamin's put in a situation where he knows the most terrible outrage, but he can't say anything. It's the same position as the Yosef, and he's quiet. He sees his father suffering for 22 years and can't say anything, according to his line in his midrash.
Could that be more out of fear?
This could be fear over here as well, but so it could be the fear, because he doesn't know what these people are capable of, but it could be even more than that. Because, you see, later on, what happens? The brothers come back from Mitzrayim, and they say, well, in order to go back down, we need to bring down Binyamin. So there's a conversation had about whether Binyamin should go down. Who are the three people who are in that conversation?
Reuben, Yehuda,
and Yaakov. What about Binyamin? Where's Binyamin in that conversation? They're discussed. He's the chattel of. It's almost like being taken down. Should we take him? Should we not take him? Well, are you going to take him? Are you going to take the car? What do you mean? Where's him? He comes down to Mitzrayim. He's at this Suda. He's silent, and then they're on the way back. He's being chased, and he's found to be a thief. He's found that he's got the goblet, which is now going to put everybody else at risk. And so therefore, in great defense, who speaks up? Yehuda. And Yehuda and Yosef have a showdown. Where's Binyamin? Binyamin is the most silent in this whole saga, in this whole drama. Where's Binyamin? He's silent all the way through. Binyamin is the person of silence who comes from Rachel. He's the person who leads to a person of silence who happens to be Shaul HaMelech and happens to be a person called Esther HaMalka from that same ilk. But there's another side to Binyamin as well. Because the Ramban brings another pirush of what his name really means. Benoni doesn't only mean the son of my mourning, of my silence. The Ramban brings one other pirush, and that is Benoni, the son of my strength. Which is why Yaakov Avinu wasn't renaming Binyamin. he was rechanneling that idea, or capturing that idea. Benjamin is the son of my right hand, the son of my strength. Sorry to all of those people with left hands out there. But in this, it's usually that capturing the idea of strength. So what do we have over here? We have a person who's got the name Ben-Oni, which could mean the son of silence, but the son of strength at the same time. And that's the tension which filters its way throughout the generations. We have a Shaul HaMelech, who is the silent person. He says, I am the smallest of all the tribes of my father. Do you know that the word katan is used 30 times in Tanakh to describe people? 12 out of those 30 times is used to describe Binyamin, and no other person gets more than 2 mentions of the word katan. Binyamin is the ultimate katan, the ultimate small person in Tanakh, yielding a Shaul HaMelech who says, I am from the smallest of the tribes. But what? He becomes a king. And when you become a king, you assume a greater responsibility, and you need to overcome that quiet. You need to overcome that quiet and express your voice, not just the voice of the people around you. And therefore, that's Shmuel's first response. Shmuel, as we just read beforehand, says to him, Im katon ato be'enecho, you may be small, you may have that aspect of Binyamin in you, in your eyes, Rosh Shifta Yisrael ata, but you're also a king now. You now have that other aspect of Binyamin, which is Ben-Oni Binyamin of the strength, the son of strength. And when you're the son of strength, you need to express it in the correct way. You need to express it in the way befitting of a king. And when he fails at this, I'd like just to draw your attention to just the end of that whole incident. It's on page, the very top of page 5, but 5 does not label 5 because it's somehow got cut off.
Can I just, Yosef yes. is the same thing, but just the other side of the coin.
Yes.
Where he's that strong character that sometimes is quiet.
Yes.
Is the quiet character sometimes.
Yes. It's very fascinating because just to go off on that just point for a second, the Maharal brings down on the Megillah, and I put it at the end of here. We're not going to go through it right now, but the Maharal at the end of the points out that there's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu says that Esau falls in the hands of the Tzi'irim, of the youngest. Who are the youngest? Are Yosef and Binyamin. He draws onto the theme of why it's Binyamin and the Megillah who are the protagonists against Amalek, but Yosef is very closely linked. Some of the Forshim point out that in fact, really, Binyamin and Yosef really share between them 12 tribes, because Yosef has 2 children, and Binyamin has 10 children, all named after Yosef. And there's a very fascinating idea over there about, in a certain sense, but between the two of them, having a mini nation between the two of them. Very fascinating idea, and how they are specifically together, the people who fight Amalek. But in our specific instance, yeah, it is a very fascinating idea how they're two sides of a coin. But actually, for some reason, the pasuk got cut off in our sources. It says that when Shmuel left Shaul after the incident of Amalek, it says he never saw him again. He's lost his chosenness from this incident, and the word it uses is Vayisabel. He mourned over Shaul. I think it may be meaningful because he's relating to that aspect of the name of Binyamin. The name of Binyamin, which is about mourning, about silence, is the way he mourns over him even during his life. There's a silence, there's a disconnect, because Shaul has expressed only the aspect of quietness and reactivity. And that's why it is, when we come back to the Megillah, that Mordechai is beseeching, he's pleading with Esther. You're in the same position. You on the one hand are from Binyamin, but on the other hand, you're a Malka. You're in the position of power. And then, Im hacharesh tacharishi, la'es kazos, if you're going to be silent at this time, like Shaul did sometimes positively, sometimes negatively, then revach v'atzala yamad le'yodim emakam acher. Somebody else is going to come in there. V'at u'beisal v'chtoved. You and your father's house will be destroyed because you have never took up that part within the Binyamin, that aspect of Binyamin, to bring it to the forefront. That's one particular idea. So I'm going to stop over here for the moment.